Welcome back to the Avery Foss podcast. This is the fourth episode. Am I right, Elisha?
Yes, it's the fourth.
I was just thinking earlier and I was like, oh, is this the third episode? Like, wait, no, this is the fourth single of the year. Fourth single? Fourth episode? Yeah. What?
It should sync. if it doesn't sync, there's something weird there.
Like, did we? I don't have... Like I have a vivid memory of the first episode.
So. It feels like a limbo.
It does. The year has honestly felt a little bit like a blur, and it's a bit wild to think that. I keep thinking that we're currently writing the fourth single, but we're not. We're actually writing the, the fifth track for the upcoming, whatever that's about to happen, and it's wild. At least for me, what has it been? How has
I know what you're trying to say. Okay, stop there. So for me, it's the same as you. I think I'm not speaking on behalf of everyone else, but I do know a lot of people are like, everything's in shambles in terms of like everybody's headspace. They don't know what's going on for the most part. And like for me personally, it's like, you know that feeling where like before I even realize it, it's already September and we're way beyond the halfway point of 2021. So anything before that is like a complete blur to me.
I mean, this is the time of the year where everybody whips out the legendary September song, where like everybody just goes, you know that song I'm talking about.
Wake me up when September. Now people know how old I am.
Oh no!
Well, hey, but that's the OG September song. If there's any other September song,
is there another September song?
I don't know. The other one is Back to December. That's Taylor Swift, right?
Yeah, but I'm thinking of another song. I'm thinking of the Demi Lovato. Remember December.
Everybody knows who is the older one. I'm thinking of
no,
Green Day.
No, that's an old song as
well. And then I was, but I think you missed it out. But I was like singing September by Earth, Wind & Fire. It made it worse.
Ooh, it's okay. I mean, there are songs that are timeless.
Yeah.
Like I was saying, this is the fourth episode of the podcast. If you guys have been listening since the first episode, it's been a ride. We're not done yet, at least not for the year. If this is your first time checking out the podcast, welcome. Hi. We are Avery Foss. We are an indie don't even know how to introduce ourselves at this point. I'm Phoebe.
And this is Elisha.
Yep. We are coming to you and at each other in two different countries. Yeah. Ayo, we've been saying this all year.
Yeah, we've been like, it's come to a point where like, it's like just smile and wave. But then I mean, we kind of understand the situation, but honestly, like for me, it's sad. It's really sad.
It's more frustrating for me at this point. I think, earlier this year, everybody was still kind of in the same boat, and there's still a lot of hope. But at this point, honestly, with Brunei and Malaysia, where we're at, it's just frustrating because the rest of the world has, not everybody, but we've seen so much potential in, recovery and being in the endemic is what they call it.
Yeah.
But we're not there, not yet, at least. And so watching other people recover and go back to close to normal.
Yeah.
I'm not going to lie, it's pretty discouraging. Mm. But I mean, we just got to know that that day will come for us too. Mm. It just takes a little longer. But, you know, I'm not going to lie, there is a certain amount of grief for the things that we've lost. Mm. And yeah, I mean, we're already starting this podcast in such a low note.
But then again, like, we get to do this. So it's not like completely, I would say, I can't find a right word for it. It's not completely hopeless.
I mean, it's not all bad. So sad. I mean, say that.
Look where we are now. Look what we've done. Especially like for us, podcast, we still write songs, and one way or another, we kind of find that niche in trying to maximize what we have, the tools that are given to us, and just the opportunities, even though it's not a lot, but we kind of make use of it and maximize it, which we will, I can bet that we will never see if we weren't in this kind of situation. But yeah.
Sure. I completely agree with you. I hear you. Well, in line with that, I think we definitely want to talk a little bit about our recent single, Night Watch.
Yeah.
And we also, it's a time of the year where I think it'll be helpful for our mental health and our sanity to kind of be a little bit nostalgic and look back at some of the stories that we've had and some of the most, I don't know, wild and ridiculous live show experiences that we've had.
And redonkulous situations the band has ever been and memorable.
Yeah, pre-COVID. I really miss playing live shows. I don't know when that's going to happen. Yeah. So yeah, I think it would be just really fun to, you know, go down memory lane a little bit. But before that, let's listen to our recent single before we, you know, get into the nitty-gritty details of how we made the song. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, this one is called Night Watch. And let's enjoy. Roll. Thank you.
how is it? Yeah.
Who are you asking? Everybody or me?
You, of course. We're talking to each other now.
It's an interesting track. I think it's the first track this year that we've released this year that has vocals in it, a more prominent, you know, vocal part.
A prominent leading lady.
Ooh, well, not, I wouldn't say leading in front, but the previous tracks have been, you know, instrumental tracks. So with this track, I think writing it, the experience of writing it and making it was very different for me, at least, was very different from what ended up, like the song that it ended up to be was a very different, was quite a contrast of my experience of journeying with making the piece of music. I honestly was writing it in a place, we actually honestly wrote it in a rush. We were trying to just get to deadlines with this one. And, you know, so writing it was a bit of a blur. It was very instinctive. I didn't have a lot of time to let it simmer and sit on things, which in hindsight, I guess, was a good thing to a certain extent. So I didn't have time to second guess a lot of things in the writing process. So what came was that, you know, I wrote, Elijah made this, I think this is one of the first few pieces where the writing and the production process was quite separate. So previously, if you've heard our other podcast episodes and all, or even are mildly familiar with how we work, we bounce back and forth a lot. And but with this track, you made all the like the instruments and layers and the music side of things, and I just came in mainly as like a vocalist and a top line, the writing. So I got the track, which was already pretty, it's pretty much in its final form. You're a draft, was it?
Yeah. It's pretty much there, but we were like trying to find like some way, somehow over the rainbow, trying to bring that track to the next level, to kind of, I mean, on a technical term, trying to make it less sound like a draft or a demo. That's why if you guys hear the song, there's this sudden key change there. It modulated to another key per se, for an entirely different section. Like you could call it a bridge, I guess. Before going back to the original, like the original line and all.
I remember going through some of our backlog and I stumbled on this demo that I did. It wasn't even for the band, it was for, you know, another project. And that's where we kind of found the vocal ambient hook. Yeah, that one. And we found that interesting. So we were like, so you were like, okay, send it to me, I'll develop it.
We didn't want to change it. It's there. We need that.
Yeah, so that kind of served as the anchor of what we would later then add on. So you took that and you developed it into like a full track. And then you sent it to me. And then I wrote the top line and recorded the vocals. And then we just went to mixing pretty much. So it was pretty straightforward. There was not a lot of back and forth with this track. But how we arrived, at least how I arrived at the lyrical idea and concept of Night Watch and also the lyrics was actually from attending a dear friend's memorial. We recently lost a close friend. The word that kept coming up was watching over. And I could not shake that out of my mind. The imagery of kind of holding on to the hope and comfort that we, the person that we've lost, is now watching over us. And and with that imagery, I just got to writing, and that was how it kind of came about. Yeah, and I know this is like the second song that kind of deals with loss and grief, but in a completely different tone than the previous single, which was Models. Yeah, I remember we had a conversation about, you know, people coming up to, you know, messaging us and saying that, hey, the song is Night Watches. It brought me a lot of comfort. It sounds like, someone told me that the song is very bittersweet. There is an undeniable sense of loneliness and isolation, yet it is surrounded and overwhelmed by a sense of unwavering hope. And I found that very interesting.
I mean, both of us had different perspectives on this. Like, when you wrote the lyrics and all, I didn't... Like, when you gave me the lyrics, it was up to my own interpretation and everything. And that's why when I was working on the song with your... with the lyrics on top of it, and basically just the last final few legs of just producing the song, finalizing the form, finalizing the sound, I would say that I was part of that group of people that kind of find it bittersweet, find it that tiredness, but at the same time there's this sense of hope at the end of the day, and to kind of, in a sense, to not lose momentum each and every day, especially right now, especially where every day is uncertain. Anything could happen at this point, and you don't really have to wait for like 2-3 days ahead. Like, it's scary to think that we're not unsure of what's going to happen. But like, what the song gave me was the feeling of knowing that at the end of the day, we're not alone. At the end of the day, there are still people out there. They're just keeping us in their hearts, in their thoughts, in their memories. And I feel like that's something that it's not tangible, it's not visible. So I think it's something that's easily forgotten when we think of, oh, our connection with other people. And that really reached out, that feeling reached out to me really well. And really vividly. So, yeah.
Wow. It's crazy to... It never... It's special because, you know, I say it before and I said it before and I really believe that a song is as much yours as it is the writer's, because interpretation is everything in a piece of art. And so to know that there is a common, you know, feeling and emotion that a few people have tend to receive, that's just, nothing beats that.
Yeah, I think that's the result we're looking for.
Honestly, with the saturation of the supply in music releases, a lot of times music just becomes really forgettable. You listen on Spotify, we stream music, so we listen to a track and then we just move on to the next. And so it's always extra special when we know that, you know, for the duration of the song, as a band, as writers, we took you somewhere, we made you feel something. And at least for me, that's really special, and I love it. So yeah.
Yeah.
What? It's such a long sigh.
No, because I think this song was pretty unique, because one thing is there's that instance of separation during the production, and then suddenly just coming together with at the very end of it. There's just something surreal with that experience to me.
I think we've had no choice but to work remotely.
Yeah.
For so long, even before COVID. I think we've probably gotten very comfortable. It's not easy, but I think we've gotten fairly comfortable having the amount of trust with each other we've honestly never really worked beyond this format of remote writing past the first EP. The first EP was just, you know, bootcamp style.
Only the first EP.
Yeah. So after that, it was like remote. But I'm very happy that we've been able to not feel terribly strangled or limited by this. I'm very happy that you are the other half of the band.
When you mentioned about the EP, it reminded me of how we started all this shenanigan of doing live performance as Avery Foss.
We tried. I mean, I know that everyone out there in the industry works their ass off, but I am not exaggerating when I say that I think Avery Foss goes through, like, we put in so much more effort and work just to play live shows.
There is so much effort, man. Like, when you think about it, it's
and
like,
I'm not talking about like endless hours of practice and this and that, just to make it possible, just to be in the same space geographically, just to be able to finance playing a show, just to, you know, people do that, but like, we organize our own shows, we go out of the way to get small shows, knowing that, you know, it's a flight away. And we're not touring. We're just wanting to do a show in KL. And that alone comes with so much more work that I think...
There's a lot of investment going on in trying to put up like even a single show.
Yeah. And it sounds like, how much work can it be? But it really is. It's not just the part where we attend the show, we play the show and practice for the show. It really is about everything else that happens, like accommodation. I don't know. I don't want to sound like a brat. Like, I don't want to do all the work.
Yeah, because we're in this position where, like you mentioned, we have to organize our own shows, and logistically speaking, we kind of have to invest in our travels. We kind of have to sync our schedules as well. Both of us have our own schedules, so we're just taking every opportunity that we can where both of us are available, and then we go to a certain like, for example, go to KL or something, and for the most part we're not even in KL just because we want to make a show. It's because of we have other things that we need to do. So all the planning, all the preparation to make sure that every step of the way we're maximizing our time wherever we are together. And that's just like a small percentage of the work that goes into trying
to make the band work.
Make a band. No, nah.
Trying to be physically in the same space.
Yeah.
But I do miss it. I mean, I would do it all over again in a heartbeat. Mm. Do you remember the first show we played?
I do remember it. I'm getting like flashbacks of all our shows. Like it's like that scene of like Total Recall or something where suddenly
the good, the bad, the ugly.
The good, the bad, and the ugly. Wow. But yeah, I remember our first live gig. I have no idea how we started. I have no idea how we decided to do it. But I think for me, just to put it in a different light, I guess, it just shows us the reality of how much it takes for a band to prep for a featured night. Even more so a band like us with all the gear, all the logistics, all the tech that goes on with it. And like initially when we were that this innocent band just trying to start off, felt like we were prepared. But then when I looked back, I was like, nah, we were underprepared.
Well, just to put it in context for everybody, the first show that we ever played was our EP launch. So we dived straight into it. We wrote the EP, not having the EP, like we didn't intend for the EP to be played live at all. So less than a month into, no, less than a, no, actually it was a month, about a month after the release of the EP, we were like, okay, let's just make a trip. We make a trip to KK, and let's just plan a launch. And prior to that, we've played solo shows. I played some solo shows.
I gig around.
You were a sessionist by trade. But we've never played a featured, we've never pulled together our own show. We've never been like a indie artist where the whole night is your night kind of thing. And we've definitely never organized a live show before.
Never organized a live show. We've never done a featured night. We've never... There were a lot of firsts, I would say.
Yes. But we were young and we were fearless. And so we did it. We also were in a place in KK at the time where it was very difficult to... there was a lack in live performing venues. So... It's unlike KL, you can just rent out a studio or there are always small places like Merdekaria or Life Fact. Or,
even know. More so, we're trying to organize a featured night.
Yeah, exactly. So what happened was we ended up, you know, playing at a bistro. And we also decided, come on, let's just get a drummer in. And we didn't know anybody at the time. I had just moved back to KK after being in KL for a while. Elijah was still studying in KL. So we were like, okay, Ken, we just get a drummer. We prep some of the tracks. It was our first time using, you know, main stage and stuff like that, backing tracks.
Ooh, main stage.
Yeah, and we were running on some ad hoc in-ear monitor setup and it was just crazy.
Oh, no. The in-ear monitors didn't work because we couldn't find a way to kind of feed it into the drummer. So what we did was, remember it? I'm not sure if it was my laptop or your laptop.
It was a visual metronome.
It was a visual metronome. So what we did was, I forgot whose laptop was it. It was yours. I don't remember. It was mine. So what I did was, imagine being on stage and then I'm kind of like stage left. EB was like, you were like stage right, and then drummer was like behind us, and everybody was looking at my laptop because on this laptop there was this huge thing that looks like a clock face that was divided into four sections, and basically it lights, the four section lights up in sequence to how fast the song we wanted to play so that everybody gets in sync, which of course ultimately, you guessed it, didn't work.
And also, like, my poor brother, we got him to play drums. He can play drums, but he was like a wee teenager. He's never played a live show before.
Yeah.
He plays in church. And then we were like, you can play drums. Come play with us. We've got no budget. Yeah. So you play for free. We buy you dinner and that's about it. And so, like, we went into the studio. We practiced one two-hour session.
Practiced once.
With a visual metronome that you cannot hear and you can barely see when you're on stage.
Yeah.
And it was a train wreck. Because when I remember arriving at the venue for soundcheck, and I also, I'm so grateful that, you know, our friend Steven was, you know, we were like, we need to play a show, we don't have all the equipment, and he was like, no worries, I'll do it for you. I'll do it with you. And I'm very grateful for that. So we arrived at the venue for soundcheck. Prior to that, we had already done like I went to the venue and did sort of like a recce and figured out what was available at the venue. So what happened was we arrived 3 hours before the show to set up and soundcheck, only to realize that the stage monitors that were on stage have not
been
in use since the beginning of the bistro's, you know, business. And they have like bands singing there on a regular. And it wasn't until that moment that they realized, oh, we never used it. It was just there on stage. And is there a way to make it work? No, never. So we worked with no stage monitors, a visual, essentially a silent metronome.
A silent metronome, and given the situation, we couldn't hear ourselves. So, wow.
But we pulled through. It was a 45-minute set, and we pulled through the whole show.
We didn't stop. We continued. We muscled onwards. We muscled ourselves onwards until the end.
And it was also like a full house of my friends and family that came. And we also had to battle. It was an open kind of, it was an open concept. People could come in and order and eat. It was a bistro. So we also had to battle just noise from the clanking of the cutleries and the plates and people serving food. It was just... but it was full. It was a full house. You know, my friends and family, like I said, packed the place, and we kind of, it was also kind of a blur because I was performing with a migraine that eventually after the show landed me in the...
She was performing under the influence.
I mean, yeah, I ended up having to be in the hospital for about 2 days. But I would do that again in a heartbeat.
We were so young and naive and so adorable.
Were we adorable? I don't know.
I was like I mentioned earlier, I was having flashbacks to all of our gigs before this, starting with the EP launch, and I was like, I was imagining myself if I was there physically as a whole different person, but still with this amount of knowledge with me, I would say so many things to my younger self of what not to do at that point.
Well, that's how we learned, I guess, you know.
Yeah, I would say pull back, guys, pull back.
No, see, but we muscled on, in your words, and that is how we really got to learn, because from there we've done a couple other shows, and most of them have also been problematic in one way or another.
Yeah,
because we're so green. But I think somehow, even though we have very little experience, we still have very little experience playing live shows, but prior to COVID, we've just been afforded so many local shows that have, I would say, for a new unknown band that plays weird instrumental music in this region, I think it's just, I don't know, it's just been wild to be able to have played some of the shows that we've gotten to play.
It's new and surreal because, like you mentioned, weird, weird. Like the shows that we play, it's different. We, not to like praise ourselves or something, everything was different. We've never played a show where the other band is like really exactly like us on the dot. So I think it's such a privilege to just being given that opportunity with our sound, with our style, to kind of play side by side with in some of these gigs, some of the notable like artists like in Malaysia and all. So
yeah, we've played a few of these. I remember, I suddenly remember, you know, the first show was that launch, and I think, correct me if I'm wrong, the second or the third show was then for a local festival.
Oh yeah, the second, third
show. Yep. Yeah, it was that. It was a. We're trying to keep the names slightly anonymous, so we want to be a bit respectful. But I remember that show. That show was wild. I love I loved every minute of playing that show because it was just really by the beach side.
And, oh, that one. I was about to ask, all our shows are wild. Which shows is she talking about?
That show had a rough sound check because there was just a little bit, like, the venue was a bit far out from the city. Mm. And our backline, like the, what was it? The stage plot and the backline that we requested for did. Like, we didn't know that they didn't carry these things until we were at soundcheck, and it was a bit of an issue. But otherwise, playing that actual show was wild because I remember being attacked by a cicadas.
Oh, yeah, because we were by the beach, so there are all these different bugs from all the different bug families flying around, and they're having this kenduri bug festival in the stage because we have lighting, like the amount of lights.
Oh, yeah.
Called every bug in the area to go have a party with us on stage. Oh,
I remember singing and like feeling something in my ear.
There
and
was something just like, oh! Behind your neck or something.
I remember other, you know, artists that were performing, some of our friends there that had the same issue, and it was such a recurring joke because it kind of lightened up the mood and it was really fun, and the audience the crowd was really lovely, and I think it's one of the more like interesting shows. So we've played that show. We played some small shows in KL. We played a show in Penang. I was deathly ill in Penang. But I loved playing that show. I got to meet my primary school classmate out of the blue. And so we play these kind of small shows in KL. Well, rightly so, because we're kind of like nobodies. Mm. We're still nobodies technically, but I guess in KK, it's just a bit easier when you're based in a city to get more shows. Mm. So KL shows have largely been self-organized. KK shows, we kind of self-organized a few as well. We've played in some really cool underground venues that we've never thought we'd be invited to play. Mm. And I remember this one other festival that we played. We were slotted to be a 9 a.m. slot. Do you remember that?
I remember. Yo, I remember all the shows that we play, man.
That was such a good show.
There's always something. There's always something.
Yeah, I loved... That was such an experience because that was the first time that I played to nobody. Like, there was nobody at 9 a.m. at that festival. We played another slot, which was kind of in the afternoon, and that was fine.
Yeah,
that was really chill and nice.
Except for the rain.
Except for the rain and the mud and the flood. But the 9 a.m. slot was... It was such a ride. I mean, I enjoyed that set because, you know, the people there were really nice. Mm. The MC was really nice. I think people were listening over at... You know, there was a bazaar happening as well, but I remember being on stage and just looking at rows and rows of empty plastic chairs, and was just nobody. So we were playing our set to plastic chairs, and I remember feeling
we were playing our set to the sound engineers and the MCs.
Yeah, and I remember thinking to myself, this is a story to tell. This is one for the books.
You know what's the most memorable thing for me for that one, that 9 a.m. show? It felt like a small group of friends kind of get together. Because when we finished that, we were just going around trying to check the bazaar, see what's happening. But shortly after that, we left. And the only way for you to leave that place was to drive out from right in front of the stage where... people coming in and out. I remember vividly when we left, it was like waving goodbye to like two or three friends that we were essentially visiting their homes, and two and three friends just waving goodbye to them, then just leaving like that.
Bye! Yeah, I remember that too. Like, oh. And I remember they were really nice. They were like, oh, Avery Foss is leaving. They knew that we...
Oh my gosh. It was all over the system. Everybody could hear it. Oh, no. Yeah.
And everybody at the booth were just like, oh, bye. And there was still no... I think it was like 10 a.m. We stayed
around no
and
one.
Hung out. Yeah. And it was still nobody except for the vendors and the MC and the performers and, you know, people that were supposed to be there were there.
Yeah.
And that was, man, that was a vibe.
That was so cute.
It was. It was. And I can, you know, we now have a story to tell. Like, we've played to nobody before and we thoroughly enjoyed the set. I really enjoyed the strip down set. I remember we played like a slightly stripped set for that festival.
Mm-hmm.
And that was probably one of the last, that wasn't 2019, so that was the last show in KK.
We played.
So that was the last show in KK, and then we flew over to KL and did a couple shows. We did one or two shows, and then that was it. We haven't played live since, and that's like December 2019.
Wow. So, yeah, that's so much. I mean, we did play like a few, like when we went to KL, we did play like a few shows. I'm trying to like recall everything chronologically. So it's crazy to think how much we've like, I guess, evolved from shows to show, because like as we go from show to show, we're learning new things. We're experiencing different things. We don't really play that much show as much as probably someone else. But there's always something new.
There is always something new.
There's always something new.
Every show that we've played, it has never gone perfect. None of our shows... In fact, I think every single show that we've played, something happens. Like, it's either something happens during soundcheck or something happens during the show, which when soundcheck happens a bit too smoothly, I kind of start to get worried because I'm like, oh, what can go wrong?
There was that one show, like, we played a few shows that were quite okay. Like, I mean... basically no hassle at all.
I loved every minute of playing, of opening for our friend MKNK.
Yeah.
So we got our friend Raymond in to play drums. This time we made sure that the metronome
worked. We came in prepared.
We made
sure. Use the rest.
Yes. We made sure that we had all we needed to make a live show. A show with
our,
a drummer.
Yeah, our set work,
and it did work, and it was our first time playing with a drummer. I feel so bad for saying this because first time technically my brother, but that doesn't count.
Time we played with the drummer and it works.
Yes, and I was so excited because after that I was like, man, I want to be able to bring, you know, include a lot more live arrangements into our live sets.
More people on stage with us.
Yeah, and we worked really well with Raymond. He's he's a great dude. And so we were really excited to explore the possibility of expanding our live setup.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, you know, moving forward, it proved to be a little more difficult because of... Well, the big part of it is really just financing.
Yeah,
an extra... And we didn't want to, like, expect him to come with us for free, you know.
Yeah.
So we kind of... And then COVID hit, so we never got to play with him again. Yeah, it's so sad. And I loved that night, though. It feels so different.
It feels different. The place was packed. There's, like you mentioned, like, I really do wish playing with... like having more people on stage with us. I come from that background with sessioning with actual live musicians. So I kind of it's such a surreal experience, especially coming from a place where it's just us two on stage with like
it gets tracks. Lonely.
It gets lonely, yeah. And then playing with Raymond that night kind of reminded me of, yes, this is the feeling that we kind of missed out on as BB4s. And
yeah,
just feeling that backbeat behind us, not just in our in-ear monitors, not just through the speakers, but an actual drum set being hit right behind our, like right behind us. It's such a 4D experience.
It's just the adrenaline. I don't have as much of an experience with playing with a big lineup, but I definitely know what you mean when it just hits. And I was able to just focus on me, on doing, on just the vocals, and also focus on the performance and not have to worry too much about, because I know that, you know, you lot have my back, and I can just,
and then on my side, because like how we do it is like I'm always responsible with all the additional heavy like tracks sequencing, that are running, the sequencing and everything. So on the technical side, it kind of gave me a bit of relief, because now with a live drummer, I don't have to worry about my system running too many things in one time. I don't have to worry about anything crashing randomly in the middle of the set or something. All the weight is now being lifted up from me and given to, that night it was given to Raymond, and
Shout out to Raymond.
Shout out to Raymond. He's an amazing drummer. We were playing with a click, and I would say playing with a click takes a whole different skill set, but he can pull it off.
He's a pro, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would love to play more, hopefully, when, you know, all this ends. And I really do miss it. Now that we're talking about it, I miss it even more. But yeah, I mean, it's good to reminisce. It's good to... I've been honestly feeling a little hopeless with the, you know, moving forward. And, you know, just talking about this tonight has definitely... Mm. Helped me remember why we do what we do, why I chose to just make music. That can be blurred, especially after being cooped up for so long. It becomes a bit aimless. And I'm glad we talked about it. Yeah, cool. Having said that, we want to move on and close with our... closing segment, as always.
Our special segment where we become the most notorious advice givers in the entire world.
Notorious.
Notorious.
Self-claimed notorious.
Self-claimed notorious. Okay, so before we end this podcast, we will, since we're in this happy feeling of reminiscing, and I shall introduce the next segment. Da-da-da-da-da-da. Worst advice. So what we do with this segment is that we're gonna ask each other. We're gonna give each other a situation. That's one, and we're gonna ask each other what would be the worst advice you could give to someone that's in that situation.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
And I am ready for your situation.
So if you guys, like, for those who don't know, somebody here is an avid climber.
Oh, no. Don't say that.
I said avid. It's not like, oh, pro or no pro avid? Or anything. Avid, yeah. Is it avid? Is that an American English thing?
I think it's avid.
Avid. I mean, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Avid.
Tomato, tomato.
Same thing. But anyways, but yeah. Someone here is an avid climber. And that, that person is not me. So I wonder who.
Is that your worst advice? Who is
no,
the worst?
It's not my worst advice. Okay. So this one, I think you would have the best between the both of us, at least I think you would have the you have more experience regarding this. So my question is, like, what's your worst advice you can give to someone that wants to start climbing?
Worst advice?
Yeah.
For someone who wants to start climbing? Yeah. And I mean, just I really am not. Like, I found climbing to be an outlet for me to just calm my anxiety and all my thoughts. So that's as much as... I'm not as avid as Elisha claims.
But you started.
Yes.
So what's the worst advice to someone who's starting?
For someone starting? I don't have... My worst advice is not even funny. It's like legit worst advice. But I know it's not supposed to be funny. I don't know.
It's supposed to be
comedy. I guess my worst advice, the first worst advice that comes to mind, is to go with the common advice and buy climbing shoes that are two or three sizes smaller. Because there's a common saying where, you know, if you're climbing, you're supposed to downsize your shoes so that you can have like a better grip. And that is one of the most common advice that I've gotten, and also I've heard other people give and get, is to downsize your shoes as much as you can. But if you're just about to start climbing, like I am, I bought a pair of climbing shoes, 2 weeks into the lockdown in June, thinking by August I would be out of lockdown. But it's now September and I've not been able to wear it yet. But yeah, so I kept getting the advice of like, downsize your shoes. And I somehow something told me not to. So I bought it in the size that my heart was telling me to buy. And it turned out to be, so far, it feels like it fits just fine. If it was too small, you would hurt too much. It's just like learning the guitar. The worst advice is to practice 5-6 hours when you don't have calluses yet, and then that will deter you. So my worst advice is to jump straight in and go all out. Don't do that.
Don't think that you're a monkey.
That's good advice because they have good technique. Oh yeah. Anyways. Yes. Enough about me and climbing. This is not the podcast for it. My question for you, I've been getting that a lot. Q-U-E-S-H-E-N, question. My question for you, Elisha, is...
Yes?
What is your worst advice for someone who overslept and is late to his or her own wedding?
To his or her own wedding?
Yes.
Worst advice. Yeah. Oh, man.
I don't know if it's possible to even oversleep on your own wedding day, but let's just assume that
I've been to one that's very close, yeah.
So what is your worst advice to that couple?
that was close to this, but it was in a different context, but the result could be the same. But yeah, my worst advice to someone who's overslept and is late to their own wedding would be to this is hard. It's so hard. It's such a special day. Why would I give someone a bad advice?
Because then they will learn what not to do.
Oh man, this is hard. Worst advice.
Just the first thing that comes to your mind.
The first thing that comes into my mind, and I will justify it. My worst advice is to drive yourself to your wedding.
Why is that the worst advice?
Okay, the reason why it's the worst advice is because the last thing that you want to do is to put everything into your own hands. Because funny enough, like I mentioned earlier, I've been in a situation where this is very close to something like this. And the only reason why that person managed to get to his or to his wedding was because there were people. There were like people were there. People knew it was his day, so people are super conscious as to where that person is in each every time at every second of the day. So you do not want to put any more burden on yourself, especially when you're trying to. You want to wear your like maybe like your wedding dress or your tuxedo or something. And the last thing that you want to do is to kind of squeeze as much of whatever that needs to be done onto yourself as much as possible.
Well, if you're late, and you have nobody else to drive you, then you got to do what you got to do, isn't it?
Yeah, that's true. But
well, I kind of have like a situation. I have the worst advice, my own worst advice. But I was just thinking, when you were thinking, I was thinking as well. And I was like, well, the worst advice that I can give somebody is really, if you've overslept at your own wedding, it's you're late. Just go back to sleep.
Oh, like, my God.
You're already late. Just go back to sleep.
You're already registered. Everything's official. Just go back to bed.
Like, it's done. They said yes.
They said yes. It's all in the register. The government approves it. Your country says yes to it. So
just go back to sleep.
Just go back to sleep. It's okay. Everybody gets their food. Everybody gets to hang out. Oh, dear. Nobody's looking at you.
See, I'm not trying to brag, but that is the worst advice.
That's such a
good... It was a good one. It's so self-congratulatory. It was a good one.
Pat yourself in the back.
Good job. Good job. And in line of good job, I think tonight we did kind of a... I would say that, I don't know, it may be a bit rambly or a bit chatty, but I do think that it probably is a bit more fun than our previous podcasts. Yeah, and I enjoyed it. And so, good job, Elisha.
Good job. It's fun because my audio waveform for my vocals is very, very fun looking.
Oh dear, I'm gonna have a lot of fun editing.
No, as in like the waveform is like our previous podcasts were like, oh, it's at that level. Mine is like, woo, it's like a roller coaster ride.
Yeah, same. I'm just looking at it and just trying to make sure that it doesn't peak on my side. Yeah. But I had a lot of fun. It's a little long, I think, the podcast tonight, compared to our previous episodes. But hopefully, you know, if you're listening, hopefully you kind of had fun with us. Mm-hmm. My chair is squeaking, and I'm sorry if you hear that.
Squeaky.
But yeah, thank you for spending your time with us. Thank you so much for listening. Guys. Feel free to check out our other podcasts. Yes. Feel free to stream our music. Mm-hmm. Definitely come say hi on social media, Instagram, Facebook, at Avery Foss Music. Yes. And what else? We will see you in the next episode of the Avery Foss podcast. And please stay safe. Take care.
Stay kind,
yes. And we'll see you guys soon.
Bye-bye.